The third largest city in the U.S. is Chicago. The fourth largest, Houston. But there's a city in this country that falls between those two in population. It has no name, but we could call it Incarceropolis. The U.S. prison population, more than 2.3 million. Bigger than Houston, smaller than Chicago, and a city that has grown 500% in 40 years. No city in America even comes close in that time. In fact, you'd have to go back to 1990 to find a prison population half that size. Criminal justice reform activist Glenn E. Martin does not want to go back to the 1990s. He does envision a future, though, where America cuts its prison population in half. He's president and founder of Just Leadership USA. He's already had success in the announced closing of New York City's notorious Rikers Island. He says thinking about the prison population as a tangible constituency, like a city, is part of getting to what he believes is an attainable future.
You know, as someone running an organization with the goal of cutting the number of people under correctional supervision in half by 2030, and then launching our first campaign to take on an island that's been referred to as Gladiator School and Torture Island for all the right reasons, it's become clear to me that if you listen to people who are most harmed by an issue and you allow them to define the finish line, that everything else that we see as high-hanging fruit suddenly becomes much lower-hanging fruit. The mayor of New York City deciding to take young people out of solitary confinement within the year of the campaign is evidence of that. Deciding not to spend $1 billion on a new jail on Rikers Island is evidence of that. Deciding to do other things that just a year earlier seemed impossible helps me to believe that as we move forward with ambitious goals, that things like doing the right thing and supporting people when they exit prison are just going to become not just no-brainers, but the easier thing to do, if you will. Mm-hmm. And so I think incrementalism is important, but it's even more important within the framework of a much more ambitious goal.
When will the discussion of whether a person has had experience in prison or not become they have a story to tell and an expertise to deliver as opposed to they're disqualified from being at the table?
That's a really good question. Part of me building Just Leadership USA was to invest in the leadership of other people like me. What I quickly realized as someone who rose up in this field and became the exception is that I'm not really the exception. I was exposed to exceptional opportunities. And I've decided to take whatever privilege and access I've amassed and invest in the leadership of other people like me, because I just think that not only do people who've been through the system utilize their experiential knowledge to help other people understand how policy lands and how it's landed for them and their families and their communities, but these folks have ideas. I mean, people closest to the problem are closest to the solution, but furthest from power and resources. And if we recognize that someone who's been harmed by a system of oppression has done much more thinking about what would have worked for them, more so than a person who's never been in the system, then we suddenly put value in what people bring to the table, both professionally and in terms of their ability to help us connect to the issue on a human level.
How do you figure out which direction this country is moving in? I mean, on the one hand, you describe some of these changes that have taken place. But on the other hand, you've got Jeff Sessions from Alabama who wants to crack down on criminal activity, who uses the language of the 1970s in some ways. You've got a Tennessee judge who offered prisoners a chance to reduce their sentences by sterilizing and using birth control implants as an incentive. I mean, that's, you know, going back to the 1800s.
So let's be clear. All of this stuff has existed, particularly for poor people of color. We've been yelling about this forever. This has all been a part of our reality. And yet the onion's been peeled back. You can't close Pandora's box at this point. And I actually see value in that. What is happening now is the demystification of the very things that people have been suggesting have been happening for decades, if not centuries, in this country. And so where does my hope come from? My hope comes from the inability for anyone who has common sense, who can be reasonable, to deny that this is systemic, that it is a perfect example of how systems of oppression are durable and they reinvent themselves right under your nose. And what we have today is just the newest version of what we had yesterday. And so my hope is that more and more people of privilege who see this, who come to believe in it, who decide that they don't want to live in America that has this set of values and who want to do something about it, will actually add their voices, add their labor, add their resources, and add their privilege to the effort to move towards a more fair, humane criminal justice system, but also more broadly, a more fair and humane country where we actually live up to the inscription on our Statue of Liberty and in our Constitution and elsewhere.
We're just a couple of years away from a decade out from 2030, when you've said, I want the population to be cut in half in America's prisons. If we're talking in 2030, do you think you're going to have that same level of energy or satisfaction about having achieved that goal, or where do you think we're going to be?
You know, our criminal justice policymaking in many other areas, education, a bunch of other places, is extremely fear-driven. The only thing that has ever pushed back on fear-driven policymaking is hope. And so I have to have hope that we will emerge with a criminal justice system that is not just half, but even less than half. The idea of half is just to get people inspired to be bolder. When I look at where we are now, I think it's difficult for people to see the finish line. But I think of Rikers, again, as the example. When I served time on Rikers, there were 22,000 people there. Now, citywide, we have 10,000 people in jail in New York City. And to close Rikers, you have to actually cut it in half again. And so that's why we took on this campaign, because you won't get to the finish line unless you cut the population in half. I think if Rikers, a place that has represented so much harm, so much human carnage, so much systemic abuse, we can cut the population in half and achieve public safety. Crime in New York City is down to levels of 1961.
You're listening to The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International in collaboration with the New York Times and WGBH Boston Public Radio.
There are people who have been through the criminal justice system that are saying no more, that the stigma of the criminal record, the scarlet letter, is not going to get in the way of them having their voices heard, having their ideas heard, and emerging into leadership, and even challenging our allies to speak with us and not for us. And I think that that voice, those voices, will only continue to grow louder and ultimately will not be able to be ignored.
Glenn Martin, president and founder of Just Leadership USA. Fascinating and important discussion about a very urgent issue in the United States. All reform depends on criminal justice reform. You've said it, and it's true. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me back, and thanks for helping to keep the conversation going.
At Radiolab, we love nothing more than nerding out about science, neuroscience, chemistry.
But we do also like to get into other kinds of stories. Stories about policing. Or
politics.
Country music.
Hockey.
Sex. Of bugs.
Regardless of whether we're looking at science or not science, we bring a rigorous curiosity to get you the answers.
And hopefully make you see the world anew.
Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know.
Wherever you get your podcasts.